Hello, my name is Jody Lee Ma, and welcome to Dream Gardens, where we talk up the kids' books we love. On this twice-monthly podcast, I interview other kids' books enthusiasts, such as writers, teachers, and librarians, about their own favorite children's books. For the past six podcasts, I've mentioned a variety of awards given out for children's books and creators of children's books. The Newbery, the Caldecott, the Coretta Scott King, Scott O'Dell, Pura Belpre, and the Laura Ingalls Wilder Awards. On this podcast, I'm going to add one more award on the list, and that will be the last one I talk about for a while. Not that there aren't a bunch of other worthy awards out there, but I figured it was time to move on to other topics. So the last award I'm going to briefly talk about is the Stonewall Book Awards for Children, specifically the Stonewall Mike Morgan and Larry Rowan's Children's and Young Adult Literature Award. This honor is specifically for those books that give a positive voice to characters from the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered community. This is the youngest of all the awards I've mentioned so far, having only been given out since 2010. It was named in honor of Larry Rowans, who passed away in 2016, and his partner, Mike Morgan. Larry worked at Vanderbilt University's main library, and he was a member of the American Library Association's governing council since 1992. In that capacity, he was a strong supporter of the Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender Roundtable of the ALA and its Stonewall Books Awards. And it was through the financial support of himself and his partner that a Stonewall Award for both children and young adult fiction was created. Past winners have included Beautiful Music for Ugly Children by Kirsten Crone Mills and George by Alex Gino. In 2017, the award for children's books went to Rick Riordan's Magnus Chase and the Gods of Asgard, The Hammer of Thor. The reason for the selection was explained as follows in the ALA's press release. In Magnus's second adventure, Rick Riordan introduces readers to Alex Fierro, a gender-fluid teen who has startling eyes, an impressive sweater vest, and a tendency to hit people. Alex is a hero and represents the expansive possibilities of gender for future generations. My guest today is writer and educator Jen Vincent, author of the ebook My Story Is Here, Be Present and Explore Your Story. You can find her blog at www.teachmentortext.com and her website at www.jenvincentwrites.com. Thank you for joining me today, Jen.
Thank you so much for having me. This is super exciting.
Now, you've worked extensively with both adult and younger writers, and one of the big ideas you share with them is this idea of using mentor text to improve their writing. What is a mentor text, and how can it be used?
I get this question a lot. People are curious about what exactly is a mentor text and what could qualify as a mentor text. And honestly, a mentor text is any kind of writing that you can use and take and then use it to inform your own writing. So I remember one time I was at a Starbucks and there was this beautiful quote writing on the wall. And I remember thinking, oh, that's so pretty. And that could be a mentor text. There's like stories on Chipotle bags. That could be a mentor text. But anything you read too, it could be a poem. It could be a book. It could be a picture book. Anything really that influences your writing can be a mentor text. So it's kind of neat in the sense that you can go find whatever you want, you know, and use that to influence your own writing. So it can be so many different things. And then something might influence your writing in multiple ways. Like it might inspire you to have an idea. It might inspire you to think about descriptive writing. It might inspire you to look at your first sentence, you know. So mentor text really can be anything, and it can influence your writing in any way.
And do you encourage people to collect different texts along the way to help them with their writing?
I see myself as a connector, so I'm always doing that. I'm always thinking as I'm reading, I'm thinking as a writer, right? So I'm paying attention to different things that can influence me. So often now as I'm writing, if I'm working on a picture book or a novel, then I think, oh, I need to go back and find this book, you know, or collect all the books that then I can read through that help me think about my own writing. So I do think, as writers, we have to read as writers, right? You know, it's so often people read for enjoyment and for fun, which is wonderful. But when you're writing, then you start to kind of sometimes turn on that writer hat so that when you're reading, you're actually paying attention to what the writer is doing. So especially when I talk to students, I have them think about that, you know, because I think the more we read, the more we have experience with words, and then we can put that into our own writing. So yeah, I think definitely people can be thinking about mentor texts as they are reading and either collect those or when it's time to write, go back and think, where have I seen this been done before? You know, and think about who they like best as writers and go back and find that writing to influence their own writing.
The book you chose as one of your favorites to talk about today is The Girl Who Drank the Moon by Kelly Barnhill, which was published just last year, 2016, by Algonquin Young Readers and was this year's winner of the Newbery. What can you tell readers who are unfamiliar with this book or haven't had a chance to read it what it's about?
Oh, I love this book. Okay, so The Girl Who Drank the Moon is an absolutely beautiful fantasy. And it's basically about people in this town who believe that every year they have to offer up a baby to a witch who lives outside the town in the forest. And so they sacrifice the youngest baby and they put them out in the forest. And so everybody in town is scared of this witch and they think that that's why they have to sacrifice the baby. But then you get to see the witch's perspective and she comes every year and thinks, why does this town sacrifice this baby? And so she knows she has to come and help the baby, get the baby to somewhere else where they can take care of them. So it's an interesting juxtaposition between the two perspectives and how one is doing it for the witch, but there's really more to the story and to why this town is doing it. And then the witch ends up falling in love with one of the little girls and keeps her and takes care of her herself. And so then it's about that story and unraveling why exactly, or what's going on with this town and why they've been doing this for so long.
And what is it about this book that really appealed to you?
Well, I was thinking about that. And you know what? I read this last year, actually. My mom is from Guatemala, and we were able to go, the whole family, like 17 of us went to Guatemala for 2 weeks, and I had never been before. I'm almost 37, so I was 36 at the time, and I had never been to Guatemala. So part of me, I think when I was there, it was so awesome to read. I just love it. So part of it is the time when I read it. But the book itself is just so beautiful. I love the description. I love the characters and how she brings them to life. I think she does, Kelly Barnhill is the author, she does such a good job at helping us see the different characters and how they are all wrapped up in the story. Yeah, I love that. The description and really being there and being in the moment. And I just really connected with the place, the setting, and the witch, but then also the little girl, Luna.
Now, Luna, the main character you mentioned, is an abandoned child. She finds this other family, as you've talked about. Could you describe a little bit this new family that she grows up with and what they do for her?
So Zan is the witch who's in the forest, who is actually really kind and gentle. And she lives in the forest with the swamp monster, Glurk. And then they also have this teeny little dragon named Firion. Yeah, it's interesting, this notion of what this family looks like and how unique they are. But they love each other so much. And I think Luna grows up being adored. You know, they love her and she is protected, but at the same time has this opportunity to explore and live in this really neat place. Yeah, I love it. It's neat how they all come together, but again, they all really adore each other.
Another major character in the book is Antane, who isn't magical at all. What does he and his story bring to the book as well?
What's so interesting is, again, going to this idea that how Zan and Glurk love Luna, I think that's, it's similar in this, inside the city, is that this boy has so much heart. Right. And he feels for people and he notices things that are going on. And so he's a big part of helping to, like I said, unravel what's happening inside the city. And so I think even though he might not have the magical powers like the witch or the magic that's keeping the city together, but I think his magic is that he cares. Right. Like there's so much heart in him for his family, for his wife, and for trying to help, like I said, unravel what's going on.
One of the characters whose story really resonated with me is this mad woman in the tower. And I wonder if it isn't because I'm a parent that her story really connected with me. And I wonder, you know, if it might be different for a kid reading it as opposed to someone, you know, an adult who's a parent and reading the same story, that it would have the same sort of reaction. I was wondering what you thought about that.
Yeah, we just had a discussion at one of my schools about that. We had tons of quotes about reading, and one was something along the lines of, no person reads the same book, right? Like we bring our own experiences to the book that we're reading. And I think the same goes to how old you are when you read a book. You know, you read a book when you're older and you think different things from when you were a kid, even if you read the same book. And I agree with you. I think for this, me as a mom too, I definitely identify with that connection with my own kids and could see the different layers there. But I think kids, I mean, I think kids would catch it. They might not identify as much with the woman in the tower, but I do think kids would maybe identify more with Luna and understanding, you know, what her story is and trying to know how she can get to herself and find herself.
Now, there's a lot of fairy tale motifs in the book. There's the abandoned child, the witch in the forest. There's a secret word that can't be spoken, or the spell is undone, so on. They're not always used in typical ways. I was just wondering, what ways do you think this is kind of like a fairy tale? And what ways it kind of upends the idea of certain fairy tale ideas?
Yeah, I remember thinking that as I was reading this, it's like, oh my gosh, this is such a fairy tale, right? Like, it feels like the fairy tales that we know and love. But yeah, it's totally, it's different, but then it's part of it at the same time. So I think, you know, that's what stories are. Stories weave together what's happening to people and how they grow and change and all of that. But I think really it's her writing that has made this so amazing, in the sense that her description puts us right there and we're in the story, and there are elements, like you mentioned, of fairy tales, but just so different and so fun.
Now, there are a lot of secrets in this book. The town elders have their own secret. Zan has her secret. And everybody has a good reason for keeping it, or a reason they've convinced themselves to keep it, although it never really turns out well in the end. So what's the appeal of all these secrets, even though we know it's never turns out very well for anybody?
Isn't that true for life? That's kind of how life is, right? You know, like, we all have something, maybe not deep, dark, super big secrets that impact such a world and the way they do in the book. But I think everybody has something that they wouldn't want someone else to know, you know, or that they don't want to reveal about themselves, or that they think about and harbor. And so I think that that's what's really interesting about this, is that, like you said, everybody has a sort of secret. And to me, that's the depth in the characters, right? It's not just Luna. It's not just Dan. Like, we really see the depth of all the different characters. There is so much that they're all hiding, you know, and so we get to feel that. So I think that's part of, again, going back to the writing, that she seems to know each of her characters and knows what they're hiding and what their story is and what got them there, right? It's not just, oh, they're, you know, they're scared of this, or they're worried about this. There's something that brought them to that point. And Kelly Barnhill, I think, knows that and helps us know, even if we might not know the whole story, we know enough to know that there's so much wrapped into why people are doing it. I think as a writer, so many times I've heard, and people, you know, sometimes I read and I'm like, yeah, I just, either you don't connect with the character or the character's not believable. And I think that not connecting, the more I read and see that, is, I think a reader knows when the author doesn't know the character. And this is, I've only been able to come to from writing so much, you know, like, if you really don't know your character and what they're most proud of in their life, or what they're hiding and don't want anyone else to know about, you know, if you don't know really that about your character, then it's hard to write them and make them believable. I actually just met with an eighth grade writer a couple weeks ago, and in his story, that's kind of how I felt. I felt like, why does this guy want to save what's happening here? You know? And so I said to him, let's think about this character. What's the best thing that's happened to him? Like, the best thing in his life. And he kind of looked at me with a blank face. And I was like, okay, what's the worst thing that's happened to him? And he's like, I don't know. Like, that's what you have to know. You have to know, why is he saving these kids? You know, like, what happened to him when he was six that, you know, like, he's like, something went wrong, you know, and now he's like, I'm making up for that horrible thing that happened when I was six. You know, you kind of have to have those layers in your characters, even if we never know that that happened to the character. You have to know that that's why he's doing what he's doing. So to me, I think that's what Kelly Barnhill has done, is really helped us see that, yeah, everybody has a secret, and she, like, we know that it's all woven together. And so, yeah, it's not good to necessarily keep a secret. So hopefully as a reader, you think like, maybe I should, you know, think about myself in some sense. But I think because everybody does have a secret, that's what helps us connect to the story.
Now, when Luna's a very young child, she has no control over her magic at all. It spills out of her in a very strange way. I wonder if you think the idea of magical things just happening appeals to kid, or is it the lack of control that's kind of scary for them at the same time?
Oh, yeah, magic. I mean, magic is so exciting, right? To think of all these magical powers that you have, but then to realize that magic might not be as great as it is, right? You know, I think that's an interesting thing, even for kids to know and think about. You know, we talk about superheroes all the time, and kids love superheroes, but we can't think that we're invincible all the time. So I think it kind of is good to think about how scary magic could be. So I think that's part of, you know, she has all this magic, but it might not be good in this case. But then also, yeah, thinking about how our actions influence what we do, you know, and knowing the consequence of everything and trying to figure that out. I have two sons. One is almost 10 and the other will be 7 in the summer. And my younger son, he, I think, is always trying to control himself. We're always talking to him about like, okay, like think first about what you're doing. And do you really want to make that choice? Or think about this, you know, like what's going to happen to you or how's it going to affect everybody else? And, you know, so I think kids are always dealing with that, right? Like, what would your mom say if she knew you were doing that right now? And so I think kids do have to think about that a lot, you know, controlling themselves versus just doing whatever they want to do. So I think that might also be something appealing to think about how does she manage that and have them think about themselves as well.
Now, Zan takes an interesting tactic. She's not able to control Luna's magic, and so she takes it and basically sort of contains it in this sort of small seed-like that she puts away deep in her, so locks away the magic, basically, in Luna. And I'm wondering, as a parent, is there something appealing about the idea of locking away this most difficult part of our child's personality until the child is older and hopefully better able to manage? Or would that still fail like it does in the novel if we tried to do that?
Oh, gosh. Well, I just mentioned my kids. And so it's so funny because they are both so different. My older son is just super chill, follows the rules, does what he's supposed to do, you know. And my younger son is opposite. He's very curious into everything. Sorry, my dog just came into the room, so I can hear her chains rattle there. But my younger son, yes, he's busy. He's curious. And yeah, part of me wishes I could be like, just listen and just follow the rules and do what you're supposed to do. But then a part of me also sees how he thinks outside the box and he thinks of different ideas. He is curious. He's not afraid to try things. And I love that about him. So I feel like when he is an adult, he's going to be this creative person who's going to be awesome to work with on a team. I'm always walking this fine line of, oh, you're not, you know, like, I need you to just stay here and be quiet and do this and do what you're supposed to do at school. But at the same time, I'm like, well, but also he's trying new things and he's working his way through things, you know, and he's like, I'm not supposed to do this, but I want to do this and so I'm going to do it, you know. So it is hard. It's, you know, there's things where as a parent, it would be easy if I could just have him follow the rules and do everything he's supposed to do. But I see how he is going to be, like, his personality is so awesome. So I don't want to squelch that. But I don't want him to get hurt either. And I want him to learn, you know, I want him to learn how to interact with other people and not hurt other people or cause problems, you know. So it is, it's hard. It sounds enticing, but I can see as well how it would be bad to cut that off from him, you know. And with my older son, sometimes I'm like, I want him to go out and do things and, you know, and explore more. And so sometimes I have to push him into that even to say, like, just go, be a kid, you know, be outside and have fun with other kids and everything like that. So yeah, I think that's one hard thing as a parent is wanting so much for your kids and wanting to see it happen and knowing that they're their own people. And we have to let them, you know, be their own people, help them obviously grow up and make sure that, I don't know, I think about them being safe. Like, I don't want them to not be safe and something happen to them that's not good. But at the same time, I want them to experiment and be able to experience life and grow into themselves. You know, they should have that opportunity to do that and figure out what works for them.
All right. So are there any passages that stand out for you that you'd like to share?
Yeah, actually, when I reviewed this book on my blog, I pull out what's called a snatch of text. So it's a piece of text that I think you could use as a mentor text. Obviously, I think reading it for yourself and looking for something that appeals to you is important. But this is something that I pulled out as one part of the text that spoke to me. The madwoman in the tower could not remember her own name. She could remember no one's name. What was a name, anyway? You can't hold it up. You can't smell it. You can't rock it to sleep. You can't whisper your love to it over and over again. There once was a name that she treasured above all others, but it had flown away like a bird, and she could not coax it back. So I love that quote because as we talked about recognizing, you know, as a mother, I thought about her because the woman in the tower is a mom and part of what she's lost is her memory, but also her, she's still so connected to who that name connects. I think the name connects to her, connects to her kid, her child and who she's lost. And so for me, it was interesting because she's talking about losing this name and not having it and feeling lost without it. But then at the same time saying, what's the name anyway? It's not important at all. You know, you can't do anything with this name. But at the same time, a name is important. You know, and that's what kind of caught me about it is she's trying to convince herself that it's not important, but it really is. And I think our names are important to us. You know, it's important to know your name and know who you are. But then again, to know others, and a name really is important. So I like that. I like that quote. Because of the name, because of the power of words and thinking about that. Yeah, I just really love that part.
Well, Jen, thank you so much for taking time today to talk to me about this book.
Yeah, of course. It's so awesome. I love it. Thank you for inviting me to be part of this. I could talk books all day, probably, and writing and thinking about that. So I appreciate it. It's great to be here.
You can find Jen's blog at www.teachmentortext.com and her website at www.jenvincentwrites.com. Thank you for joining me on Dream Gardens. The theme music titled All Together is provided courtesy of Purple Planet Music. You can visit them at www.purpleplanet.com. Podcast cover art is provided by Creative Pro 180, courtesy of Fiverr, to be found at www.fiverr.com. You can visit me at jleemott.com or follow me on Twitter at dreamgardensjlm. The Dream Gardens podcast is also available through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. If you like what you hear, please comment, share, or subscribe. Until next time, keep dreaming, keep growing, and keep reading.